Just a week ago, last Saturday, I was sitting right here in my study and looking out the window, working on a computer, glancing out at an absolute beautiful East Texas morning, when I heard a tremendous rumbling boom followed by several other very deep booms, almost like a series of sonic booms followed by lesser ones. And I wondered, what was this? The house seemed to shake. I immediately got up from the computer and walked out and looked outside. I didn't see anything immediately. But I'm always tuned in the living room to Fox cable news. And it was on, and my son called me, or I called him, I forget which, about the boom. What was it? And at that moment, they began reporting, and I said, it was the Columbia shuttle is coming apart as it comes back into the atmosphere. And that was an unbelievable spectacle. Now, when my own son went down just a few miles south of where I live and started taking pictures of some of the debris lying along the road, Highway 155, and I live just off of that highway, it brings it pretty close to home, and the debris field is just a little bit south of me. I live on Lake Palestine, as they call it here, which is named after the town of Palestine, or Palestine, which gave its name to the dam and the lake. And that was one of the areas where some of the debris occurred and fell to the ground. And, of course, they began to say the debris field stretched all the way from Fort Worth clear on over to the Louisiana border and perhaps beyond. So by now, everyone in the world seems to know about this, and we've heard almost nothing but all of the pros and cons and the arguments and how could it have happened, what could we have done to have prevented it, could they have escaped, could there have been some way to detect what happened to the tiles, is that what really caused it? And on, ad infinitum. Well, I have written not only some important commentaries in our website, which you can find by contacting in lowercase without any spaces between the name Garner Ted Armstrong, all one word, .org, and you can look at what I've written there in the last few days as a result of all of this. But also I want to tell you something I have for you that will raise the hair on your head when you really read it, because very few people know about this, and it is something that is revealed in literature that most people have ignored, don't understand. It's almost like secret to most people because they don't understand it, don't read it, and don't know about it. This booklet, Coming Soon, An Invasion from Space. What is that about? An invasion from space? Is there life in outer space? The answer is yes. Have people from outer space or beings of some kind ever visited the Earth? The answer is yes. And there's a tape called Visitors from Space. I want you to get both of these because they are documented, and you will be amazed when you get both the stand-up sermon delivered before a live audience, a lecture, a tape lasting for more than 1 hour, and also the booklet Coming Soon, An Invasion from Space, free of charge and no price, if you dial 903-561-7070. That's 903-561-7070. Well, it was a beautiful Saturday morning, and it was very quickly turned into a very tragic and an ugly day by what I saw happening before my startled eyes. Now, why did it happen? Well, to me, and I immediately put that up within a matter of minutes or an hour or so after seeing it happen, it was the damage to those tiles, because I knew that if others of them had come loose, then 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit at a speed of over 12,000 miles an hour coming into this Earth's atmosphere faster than the speed of a bullet was going to just rip that thing apart, melt it down, absolutely disintegrate and tear to bits, every bit of it, including those human bodies, which did happen. Now, to me, the cause and effect is absolutely obvious, and all of the hemming and hawing around and the mealy-mouthed excuses, well, we're not really sure, but kind of thing, doesn't make a bit of sense. Will America conquer space? Will man ever go into outer space? Man has been to the moon. From time immemorial, man has looked out to the heavens. We have stared out at our own solar system. We've been mesmerized by the moon. We have been mesmerized by the sun, by the motion of our solar system, by the Earth's journey around the sun and the lunar journey around the Earth once a month. And ancient pagan societies have worshipped the movement of these heavenly bodies because they've attributed all of this incredible power, the awesome beauty, the fathomless universe, to a great power or powers beyond their concept, their apprehension, or their intelligence and their degree of information and knowledge, and they have tried to get in contact with and to somehow placate or to appeal to or to be in harmony with these beings that they think are controlling all of this. Now, one of the very first aspirations in the human heart when man began to gather together in cities was to build a monument which, in a sense, illustrated their desire to reach out into the soaring heavens and beyond. And that account is found clear back in the Bible in Genesis, the 6th chapter. It was done by Nimrod, who is the eponymous ancestor of all hunters, allegedly, and he was the first one to begin to gather people together in towns, villages, and cities as protection from wild animals. And you'll find it in the 11th chapter of the book of Genesis. Reading from verse 1, it came to pass as they journeyed from it, really should read toward the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, that's modern-day Iraq, by the way, and they dwelt there, and they said, go to, or come on, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime, and that's bitumen, by the way, in the original Hebrew, a kind of a heavy crude oil, which we know is very ubiquitous in Iraq, very prevalent. They had that for mortar. And they said, go, let's build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. Now, some people thought they were trying to get to heaven. Well, that's patently ridiculous because there were mountains all around up in Kurdistan and clear on over to the Pamir Knot and the Himalayas that were upwards of 30,000 feet. And they weren't trying to build from the top of a mountain. They were down in a flat plain near sea level. But they were trying to build a monument. And that monument was a large, tall tower. And that tower was symbolic of national identity, of national pride, of national power, probably of national fatherhood, and of a desire to reach into, to look up toward, as if to symbolize the desire and the hope of man, the yearning to understand the heavens, to perhaps go out into the heavens at some time. And isn't that the goal of every major religion on the face of the earth? To get to nirvana, or to paradise, or to heaven, or into the heavens, or somewhere that they think the great somewhere and the great someplace. And that's been the yearning and the desire of mankind from time immemorial. Look at the fact that the Washington Monument, which is patterned after Cleopatra's Needle, which is an obelisk, is dedicated to the, quote, father of the country. And you look at the symbolism, and that's a little obscure, and I won't go into that, but the proposed replacement for the Twin Trade Towers in New York City involves one tremendous spire that would become the tallest building on the face of the earth. And man has continually built everything from statuary to obelisks to totem poles to tall buildings to every kind of a spire that will reach up into the heavens. You know, they call them skyscrapers. In the Spanish language, it is rascacielo, skyscratcher. Rascaters to scratch and cielo of the heavens, heaven scratchers. Well, they neither scrape nor scratch the sky, but men name their buildings after scraping or scratching the sky in an idea of getting up some kind of a magnificent tower that stands for something. And they said they were doing that lest they were scattered abroad on the whole face of the earth. The Eternal came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men builded. And the Eternal said, behold, the people is one, and they all have one language, and this they begin to do. Come now, let us go down. Interesting language, isn't it? Nobody really tumbles to that. Let us make man in our image. Well, who was talking to whom? Elohim is the Hebrew word. It means more than one. And God was not like an absent-minded professor talking or muttering to himself. If you look at the first chapter of the Gospel of John, it will tell you that the Logos, that is the Word that was Theos, the same as Elohim, was God, and without Him was not anything made that was made, and that He is the originator, the author, the inventor, the designer, and the creator of all things. And He is that member of the Godhead who became Jesus Christ and who did this speaking. He was the spokesman. Let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Eternal scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build a city, because suddenly they couldn't understand or communicate with one another. Now, it's actually true that if God had not done that, man would have been propelled into the space age probably many thousands of years ago. Many thousands of years ago. Now, look at it. My dad was born in 1892, well before the Wright brothers ever flew from Kitty Hawk. He died in 1986 at the age of 93 and a half, and he lived in that very lengthy lifespan from prior to manned flight to the time when man had landed on the moon. One human lifespan, which really, when you get my age, appears to be very, very short. And yet, from that time, we had not only seen the Wright brothers with that canard, that ancient rag-wing device that looked like a bicycle with a lot of wings all over it, to monocoque hulls pressurized so that man could fly in monoplanes at tremendous supersonic speeds, all the way to rocket flight, and the fact that we finally were into space. We have the International Space Station up there right now. The shuttle flights began to become so ho-hum, everyday routine, that most people didn't even pay attention to the launch or the recovery anymore. It was something that just took place just like any other humdrum workaday event. And until it began to disintegrate, nobody was really paying attention to it except those that really knew that it was due to come in at that particular time, including the loved ones, the NASA, and those people who were interested. But the bulk of our country knew nothing about it. It just became that familiar to us. It's just routine. Now, what is behind the entire desire for man to be out into space? First of all, certainly the military aspects of the shuttle flights and of the entire NASA program of trying to put man into orbit and man into space is lost on no one. If we have the technology, and we do, when we don't have some terrible thing go awry, to bring a shuttle with human beings in it with tons and tons of payload down to a particular landing spot right at Cape Canaveral, if we have the wherewithal to pinpoint exactly where it's going to land, then it is lost on no one that the payload there could also be nuclear weapons and on human beings. We would be able, in other words, to actually dump nuclear weapons atop a city with pinpoint accuracy from outer space. Orbital platforms could be military platforms from which nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons could be launched down upon cities on this earth below. That is lost on no one when you really stop to think about it. Now, the real reason is not a lot of scientific experiment about dust or how various crystals form or how various things act in space or weightlessness on the human body. That is only a little part of it. There are two other very major things. One is military and the other is evolutionary. When I come back, I want to go into that and discuss it with you and make it very, very clear. Take a look at this, and I'll be right back.
For decades, stories of battles in space and alien creatures have been a staple of entertainment. And the Book of Revelation describes something that could resemble such a science fiction battle. Call now for this new booklet entitled, Coming Soon, An Invasion from Space. You'll also receive the tape, Visits from Space. They're both yours free of charge when you call 903-561-7070.
We knew shortly after the close of World War II that Russia had stolen American atomic secrets and that they had nuclear weapons. We knew eventually they had exploded a hydrogen bomb. By 1950, in the war in Korea, we wondered continually, what are the Russians going to do? They caught America by complete surprise in 1957 by launching Sputnik. It weighed about 183 pounds, a little grapefruit-sized satellite with antenna on it, actually orbiting the Earth, and that began the American space program trying to catch up. And NASA was formed, and the space program was primarily a matter of national pride, I might add, injured pride, the Cold War, competition, military advantage, and world prestige. There was also eventually another factor, and that was the idea of looking out further into space. We've got the Hubble Space Telescope out there now, and talking about the origin of things, and talking about the origin of man, studying the universe, studying how the moon was formed, studying where the Earth came from. Are we really Earthlings or are we Martians? There have been those that found a rock somewhere up in Arctica, I think the Arctic, you could say, and because they thought they found, if you can believe this, fossilized bacteria, they began to say that was a chunk of rock that exploded off of Mars when a meteor hit it, and it came down and landed on the Earth, and there were fossil bacteria there that really proved that we're not Earthlings at all, but Martians, and maybe that's where we came from. So enter evolution. And from that time to this, that has been a major factor in the idea of getting out into space, is looking at human origins, absolutely discounting the Bible, the existence of God, any proofs that God exists, and looking for purely evolutionary causal factors for human life or any other kind of life here on this earth below. Now, when you look at the military aspects and all that has happened from that time to this, there are thousands of satellites in orbit around the earth. Our telephone systems, our television systems, direct TV, all that type of thing is all satellite. You can dial, as you know, from the hotel suite in Zurich directly to Poughkeepsie, and you can be just online immediately. And we know that telecommunications and all of that is just virtually instantaneous all around the earth all the time. We know that the GPS system is as a result of satellites, that you can pinpoint within a few feet something on earth which previously would have cost you $250,000 for one INS or inertial system, inertial navigational system that took the man to the moon. And we actually had one of those, we had two of them in the cockpit of the fanjet Falcon that I flew. Very costly, very sophisticated, and nevertheless, it was a series of computers, and it was very, very accurate to within about a half mile. It was built in because of the military, within about a 3,000-mile flight or so. So today, it is much more accurate as a result of satellites parked out there and triangulation on the Earth. But what about the God factor? Is there a God, and has God placed no trespassing signs in the heavens? Is man ever going to go out and away from this solar system? Now, don't think that manned missions to Mars are not feasible. I'm not saying that they will happen, but there were many who said man would never get to the moon. The idea would be that the space platform out there right now, International Space Platform, is to be added on to and added on to. Men are spending a tremendous amount of time up there, month after month after month, up to a year, whatever, in space, weightlessness and all the various problems that occur inside the human body, the vital organs of man are being studied and all of that. But the idea is to build some kind of a staging station on the surface of the moon and use that to launch a manned mission toward Mars. Now, what about the money that is spent? I mean, I could talk for the next 14 hours about all the pros and cons about NASA, about money, and about health and education and welfare, all screams of the people that I've been reading in some of the chat rooms on the Internet about NASA, about the waste of money, why don't they give some of it to me, so and so on, people will say. But I want to take you to the proofs that there is a God and to go over them very, very quickly with you because there are seven in all, and they are logical, and they are accurate, and they are absolute, and they are rational, and they have to do with the physical sciences and not with some kind of esoterica, and they are as follows. The first proof there is a God is the existence of matter, creation, the creation itself. By that I mean the universe, the solar system, the earth, and all life upon it. The creation requires a creator. A fine Swiss watch required a watchmaker. A beautiful painting required an artist. A building required an architect and a builder. Things such as that don't just happen and throw themselves together. Blasts and explosions in print shops do not create encyclopedias. And so the creation, which, believe it or not, according to Einstein's theory, shows that matter is nothing short of energy which is compacted in a certain, very orderly form. All matter is energy, because all matter is made up of molecules, and molecules are made up of atoms, and each atom is like a tiny universe with a nucleus and with neutrons, protons, and electrons whirling about in microseconds as electrical charges, pro and con and neuter, and it is, when you look at it, a tiny universe, and yet it is part of matter. Man has now learned how, in a sense, they call it splitting an atom, but it's called fission or fusion, and has learned to actually cause matter itself to explode by a nuclear device of which the atom bomb is merely the trigger to bring about a hydrogen or a fissionable explosion which causes matter itself to actually explode. And so the fact that creation exists and matter exists and the form of matter and what it is and of what it consists absolutely proves that there had to be a creator. Law. I'm speaking here of absolute law, physical law, the cleavage properties of minerals, such things as gravity. Newton did not invent it. He only tried to explain it. And no one can explain what it truly is. If I say that that pen fell, it didn't fall. It was pulled down. And if I, and by the way, about a week from the time you see this program, God willing, I will be 8,000 miles that way. And God willing, my son and I will be in Australia, where I'm due to speak three times in about, I think, 7 or 8 days, 1 week. And I will be dropping a pen down there, and it will be going in this direction, because I will be upside down. But I will think that I'm right side up. And I will be right side up because of gravity, you see. We all take it for granted. We talk about sunrise and sunset when we should say earth roll. But nevertheless, that kind of law, which is like a force or an energy that no one really understands, we take it for granted. There it is. It's commonplace every day, ho-hum. But it is a power. It is a force. It is an energy. Our gravitational field holds in its velvet grasp the moon. The moon and our earth are held in it by the gravitational field of the sun. The sun's gravity does not overpower the earth's gravity and pull the moon away from the earth. These are forces. I'm talking about absolutes. I'm talking about something that is immutable, unchangeable, with which man cannot interfere. And it is a proof of God that there are laws, which are laws of physics and science, and laws, that kind of law, requires a lawgiver. When I come back, I'll pursue the rest of these right quickly, but I want you to be sure to get this very exciting information, that I have for you, the booklet, Coming Soon, An Invasion from Space, and also this tape, which is Visitors from Space. Take a look at this, and I'll be right back.
For decades, stories of battles in space and alien creatures have been a staple of entertainment. And the Book of Revelation describes something that could resemble such a science fiction battle. Call now for this new booklet entitled, Coming Soon, An Invasion from Space. You'll also receive the tape, Visits from Space. They're both yours free of charge when you call 903-561-7070.
The third major proof there is a God, life exists, life is cyclical, and life requires a life giver. Life only comes from pre-existing life, and I might add, life of the same kind. Now the fourth is design, intricacy, interdependency. The closer you look at nature and what God has made, whether it's quartz crystals or whether it's the wing of a fly, the more perfection and the more flawless intricacy you see. The closer you look at that which man has done, even at the period, at the end of a sentence on a piece of paper because the printer put it there, the more flaws, the more imperfection you see. As a matter of fact, my son and I were just talking. That space shuttle broke up because NASA was trying its best to obey the laws that I'm talking about. Laws that have to do with the principle of falling bodies. Laws that have to do with friction, with the shield that protects this Earth called the atmosphere, which causes thousands of meteorites to burn up and to become nothing but dust before they ever bombard the Earth, except in rare cases. And because they wanted the exact entry to be just so, with those big foam and aluminum and all the other kind of constituent parts of which they are made to protect them from that heat, instead they were being ripped off of that wing, and that thing began to glow, and within seconds it must have gone from whatever temperature it was to 3,000 degrees, and just burnt them and just blew apart, came just pieces flying everywhere, because it was just like You know, you can break your neck if you jump off a tower into the water and land the wrong way, because water won't let you enter real quickly. And that's kind of an analogy like space. Out there, when you enter the air, there's a tremendous amount of friction that builds up. These are laws. They're immutable. And when you break them, they're going to break you. And that's what happened. Those laws were broken by an accident, and they broke that vehicle all apart. Design requires a designer. The sustaining of these laws, the operation of them, requires a sustainer. The last two no evolution would ever agree with, but they are fulfilled prophecy, which can be demonstrated by the spade of the archaeologist and the pen of the historian, and also answered prayer. And of course, no evolutionist or atheist would ever say that prayers are anything more than a coincidence or a placebo, but be that as it may, prayers are and have been answered. I want to give you a quick quotation from a NASA scientist who said this, quote, "One of the consequences of special relativity," talking about the Einstein theory, "is the light speed barrier." Here's another way to look at it. To move faster, you add energy. I'm asking here, can man ever achieve travel in space at the speed of light? And the answer is no. Here's what the NASA official said. "But when you get going near the speed of light, the amount of energy you need to go faster balloons to infinity. To move a mass at the speed of light would take infinite energy. It appears there is a distinct barrier here." Indeed. Infinite energy. That's the energy of God Himself. God has infinite energy. Man does not. And no man can ever build a vehicle which can move at the speed of light. And even if he could, it would take him like 55 years to get to one of the closest stars and to exit our own immediate solar system. So forget it. A lot of people think if you just throw enough of our taxpayer money at it, you can do absolutely anything. No, you can't. And I want you to read the commentary that I put up at our website at Garner Ted Armstrong, all like one word, no spaces, all lowercase, .org. And also get this material that I have for you, Coming Soon, An Invasion from Space, and also Visit from Space, or Visits from Space, the tape that is 1 hour plus. I wish I had about 4 hours now that I'm in these subjects, because some of those are encyclopedic in length that I could get into. But I don't. I've got to go until next time. So be sure to get this by dialing 903-561-7070. That's 903-561-7070. They're free of charge and no price. And be sure and tell your friends and neighbors and relatives where they can see this program. And I'll see you right here, same time, same channel, in 1 week.
Post Office Box 345, Los Angeles, South Wales.